Welcome to the KMUD News. I'm your news director, April Lewis, and I'm glad to be with you for this broadcast. On this episode, we have in-depth coverage on Eureka's budget issues and on KMUD's 39th birthday celebration. But first, a quick rundown of local headlines. This is KMUD News. Starting off with some important info on mail-in ballots as we head towards next week's June 2nd California primary election. USPS mail service changes will impact whether your ballot is counted. Due to changes at the United States Postal Service in areas outside of major cities, a ballot dropped in U.S. mail on Election Day will likely be collected too late to be counted. Under the U.S. Postal Service's new process, mail dropped off at post offices and mail collection boxes more than 50 miles from a USPS regional hub is collected the following day, instead of the same day. This means in some areas, ballots dropped off at a post office or mail collection box on Election Day will not be postmarked until the day after, making them late. Late ballots will not be counted. We highly suggest getting your ballot in the mail as soon as possible to make sure your vote is counted. Also, here are some alternative ways to ensure your vote is counted. First, you could drop off completed ballots at a secure ballot drop box. Ballot drop boxes are open and remain available until Election Day. You can drop off your completed ballot at a vote center. Select vote centers are currently open, with additional sites opening on Saturday, May 30th, and staying open until Election Day. Lastly, you could vote in person at a vote center. Select vote centers are currently open, with additional sites opening on Saturday, May 30th, and also staying open until Election Day. In Humboldt County, there were two smaller fires today, May 28th. One fire was reported in the Shively area on Mossy Lane. The fire was reported around 1:45 p.m. before being extinguished by locals in the area. Three CAL FIRE aircraft were sent to the scene but were quickly canceled. The second fire was reported around 12:30 p.m. on Tubby Ranch Road near Alder Point Road, east of Garberville. The fire only burned around a quarter acre and was stopped by CAL FIRE ground units arriving on scene. In southern Humboldt, the Humboldt County Planning and Building Department would like the public to know that the Board of Supervisors will reschedule its consideration of a report regarding redwood tree removal on a property in Lower Redway, which had been set previously for June 2nd. The report will explain to the board and the public why the trees were removed and outline steps on how similar situations will be addressed in the future. The special permit is expected to be considered by the Humboldt County Planning Commission at its upcoming meeting on Thursday, June 18th. Once the Planning Commission makes its decision, it can be appealed to the Board of Supervisors. If the board receives the tree removal report before the permit process is completed, its members could be limited in how freely they can discuss the matter if an appeal is later filed. Therefore, it's important that this permit process is completed before the tree removal report is presented to the board. In Eureka, the Humboldt County Department of Public Works is in the process of preparing to conduct repair work on the Humboldt Bay Trail on Thursday, June 4th, and Friday, June 5th. The portion of the Humboldt Bay Trail between the Brainyard Mill Site and Braycut Industrial Park will be closed from 7 a.m. on June 4th through 5 p.m. on June 5th while the repairs are being completed. Repair work will involve removing and replacing asphalt surfacing to comply with the Americans with Disabilities Act. Localized areas of asphalt will be repaired to ensure compliance with ADA slope requirements. Trail users are asked to follow all traffic control devices and trail closure signs in the construction area. In Trinity County, Trinity County is providing an update regarding ongoing efforts to improve the county's emergency communication system following recent reports of intermittent radio and paging issues impacting first responders. Reliable emergency communications are fundamental to protecting lives, supporting first responders, and ensuring the county can effectively respond during emergencies. Trinity County's emergency communications infrastructure has experienced reliability challenges due to a combination of aging equipment, limited funding resources, evolving technology needs, and a history of incremental repairs over time. The system serves a large, mountainous, and geographically complex region where maintaining communications infrastructure presents unique challenges. In late 2025, Trinity County began seeing escalating reliability concerns involving radio transmissions and paging notifications. The county has since initiated a comprehensive effort to establish clear accountability, secure resources, and begin addressing long-standing system deficiencies. County officials prioritized moving the effort from a reactive approach with those repairs over time towards a structured and sustained strategy focused on improving reliability and long-term resiliency. Some initial high-priority repairs at the Oregon Mountain Repeater Site completed in April of 2026 and showed measurable improvements in system performance. However, Trinity County officials recently became aware of additional intermittent radio and pager notifications issues affecting first responders. On May 26th, a technician responded on-site to further evaluate the system, where an initial diagnosis identified a failed duplexer component. Temporary mitigation measures have been implemented to improve reliability, while the county awaits the arrival of replacement equipment needed to complete longer-term repairs. Trinity County staff, the Sheriff's Office of Trinity County, and Day Wireless Systems are actively working to expedite technical diagnostics, identify underlying causes, and implement corrective actions as quickly as possible. Once those causes are identified, Trinity County is prepared to move quickly on additional repairs and necessary corrective actions. The Lewiston Fire Department is organizing a community meeting for local representatives to provide an overview and update, and to address public questions and concerns. The meeting is taking place on Friday, May 29th, from 5 to 7 p.m., and will be held at the Lewiston Community Center at 130 Texas Avenue. In Mendocino County, yesterday, May 27th, over 40 law enforcement vehicles descended on the Covelo area along Highway 162. According to reporting from Redheaded Black Belt, CHP confirmed the multi-agency operation to arrest two Covelo residents on multiple felony charges. Interestingly, it was a 41-year-old father, Robert Cole Whipple, and his son, 19-year-old Robert Cole Whipple Jr., who were arrested. Felony charges against both men involved illegal weapons, illegal ammunition, violation of a court order, and illegal weapons sales. And now, to our main stories. This is KMUD News. In a presentation, Eureka's finance director said the city's budget deficit reflects a soft economy that's affecting the entire county. Daniel Mintz reports.
Eureka is in a situation familiar to other Humboldt County cities. Its costs are rising at an alarming rate, and its revenues are comparatively weak. The sorry state of Eureka's budget was explored during a May 26th joint meeting between the Eureka City Council and the city's Finance Advisory Committee. Finance Director Lane Millar gave a presentation on the budget that flagged several troubling issues. He said, quote, sales tax revenues have decreased over time and continue to stay flat, and most expenditure increases are out of our control. That's resulted in a budget deficit of $800,000 in the current fiscal year. But the projection for the next fiscal year beginning July 1st is a 2% growth in sales tax revenue. That's based on a forecast by the city's financial consultants, but Councilmember Rene Contreras-Deloach has heard it before and, as before, isn't buying it.
I feel like I've spent 3.5 years arguing with these numbers, and we have declined and declined and declined and declined, and I've just kept saying it, and I'm going to argue with them again, and we shouldn't plan on it. We should not plan on it. It will be a mistake to plan on it. It's been a mistake. It will be if we do. I think we need to plan. I think we should look back at our own. I totally understand the logic behind it. It does make sense, right? You know, let's listen to the professionals. They're wrong. They've been wrong. And I think part of it is because we're rural. I don't think they're correcting for some of the things that make us unique here. And I think the recession started here sooner, by years.
Deloach added, quote, "I don't want to count on an increase. If anything, I would like us to come up with a plan for how we're going to deal with a decrease." Millar didn't disagree, and he said Eureka isn't alone in dealing with a sluggish economy.
We want to understand the health of the city, or the health of the city's general fund. And honestly, you want to understand the health of our local economy. Sales tax is really the thing you want to focus on. There's a lot of different revenue line items, but as you can see, 60% of our budget comes from sales tax. We're not alone. City of Arcata, you know, City of Fortuna, they're very similar. They're having budget issues too. And when you see that everyone's struggling with their sales tax numbers, it's telling you that your local economy might be contracting. And that, I think, is a discussion for another date. But I think it's important to really dive into sales tax and try to see what it's telling us, not about our own budget, but what's going on in the community. Here is a graph of our historical sales tax revenues. You can see that it's kind of pointed in one direction, and that's down.
Meanwhile, costs are going way up, with employee salary and health insurance costs expected to rise by $1.3 million in the coming fiscal year. The mayor and council are up for pay raises that will go before voters this November. But regardless of how that turns out, health insurance costs for the mayor and council will rise by $47,000. Employee retirement fund payouts and liability insurance are also increasing by a combined total of about $800,000. What can the city do to offset the cost quake? Councilmember Leslie Castellano has some ideas about that.
One thing I would like for us to consider, I know sometimes in kind of deficit times it's difficult to think about investing, but investing in kind of economic and development opportunities. You know, some of the things I think would be good to think about are like tourism, like a plan for Halverson Park, for turning it into more of like a consistent venue, really actually like amplifying holiday lights. So this is the destination shopping area for people throughout the region. Looking at some of the programs at the SF New Deal, like the SF New Deal, that's incentivizing growth for small businesses, because really, you know, like we can, of course, continue to recruit large industries such as wind, but in the meantime, we have small businesses that I think could grow, and that's, I think, just honestly, like often a better investment.
The City Council will review the draft budget on June 2nd, and final adoption is set for June 16th. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
KMUD celebrates its 39th birthday today, and we spoke with the station's first ever programming director to learn more of our history. KMUD News reports. KMUD is celebrating 39 years today on our airwaves. From our humble beginnings inside a Garberville cabin to now, KMUD has seen a lot of changes over the years as our region has evolved. What has stayed the same is consistent community support for KMUD and a desire to stay true to our listeners. First, in Southern Humboldt, and then expanding over the years to include Northern Mendocino, Shelter Cove, and the rest of Humboldt County, with our signal extending into Trinity and Del Norte. KMUD News wanted to learn more about the first day of broadcasting and the station's early years. So we turned to KMUD's first programming director, Harold Day. Harold is a longtime veteran of radio, dating back to the 1970s, and currently operates the FM station, KPHT, in Laytonville. As KMUD's first programming director, Harold Day was responsible for training the initial group of volunteer DJs whose shows aired on the station. We spoke with Harold today via phone about 39 years of KMUD and to hear an oral history of our beginnings in broadcasting. Thank you, Harold, for being willing to do this today on KMUD's 39th birthday. I'd love to just let our listeners, especially some of our newer listeners or younger listeners, just know a little bit about what led up to that first day of broadcasting. What was the organizing effort behind it, and how did you become involved with KMUD?
Well, first of all, I was working for Dan Healy at KERG. I had come up from the Bay Area in the early 80s. So I worked for him for a while. And while KERG was on the air, there was a group of people who got together who wanted to bring the KPFA signal from Berkeley up to here. What they wanted to do was just simply rebroadcast KPFA. But it became really clear early on that the talent that was local in Southern Humboldt was amazing. So we decided to proceed with volunteers and programs that we originated locally instead of just bringing the KPFA signal up. When KERG went off the air, then there was a push to get public radio going. And, well, I think Rick Cooper was the one that pulled me into it. Jimmy Derschlag was on the committee, and a few other people that my brain isn't wrapping around at this moment. 39 years, that's pretty amazing. KERG wasn't on the air, I think, 5 years, 6 years, maybe. I'm not really sure. But with KERG, their downfall is when they went from 50 watts to 100,000 watts. All of a sudden, the cost for the electricity for the transmitter just became untenable. And so at some point, they closed it down. And that's when the local group started a little bit more proactively getting together, having meetings, discussions, and trying to figure out how to move forward. Before we ever went on the air, we had, I think it was a two-week sampler that we did from downtown Garberville. There used to be BB's Shoes right near where the Texaco and the Chevron gas stations, right across from them where the Giddy Up is now, real close to that. And it was upstairs, so we had kind of a nice view. But we had quite a few people come in during that period of time. We had really good feedback from the community as to what we were doing. And after that short window, then we had to get back to the paperwork dealing with the FCC, trying to move forward with our license for KMUD. And when it came time to select the call letters, it was kind of interesting. KMUD was actually a maritime set of call letters, and we had to petition the FCC to release that so that we could use it. And KMUD came from the Great Muddy, the Eel River. Jim Deerhawk was the first station manager, and he had always talked about the Great Muddy, the Eel River, and especially during the winter when it's all churned up and everything. So that's kind of where the name came from, or the call letters came from. Early days, we were at the south end of Garberville. There were little cottages there. We initially moved into one cottage. It became clear that one cottage wasn't big enough, so we took over a second cottage, and I believe even a third cottage, before the station moved to the Redway location. This happened when I was already exited. What I did was, I had been in radio since 1974. I'd worked at a lot of commercial stations, and I'd been in mid-management to management during most all of them. And I just didn't want to deal with the amount of people that we were going to be dealing with. We were looking at a minimum of 100 people a week coming through the station. And so I said, hey, you know, I'll help write our rules and regulations, and I'll help train people, which I trained most everybody who went on the air. At crunch time, there were a few people that I just kind of said, okay, this is what you do. You sit down, this button does this, this button does this, good luck. And we moved forward. It was a pretty amazing time back in the, when was it, 1987 when we went on the air? 80? You said it's 39 years, so
yep,
I guess
87.
That's 87. Yeah. Wow, the community really supported what we were doing. The amount of volunteers that came forward was wonderful. Almost right off the get-go, we had a wall-to-wall volunteers. And the programs that were coming in, the talk shows and stuff, the people dealing with those talk shows are some of the brightest people in Southern Humboldt, and definitely knew their way around the subject that they were bringing to the radio. After the station got up and going, I didn't really want to deal with that many people. So I bowed out at some point, and Michael Jacinto became the program director, and he stayed in that position for quite a while.
We, of course, have, you know, our current program schedule here. It's been established for a number of years, but I imagine it was quite different, especially in the very, very beginning. So I'd love to know, you know, what was most of the programming? You talked a little bit about talk shows, but, you know, what was a lot of that early programming consisting of, and what exactly were you looking to give to the community with that programming?
Well, first of all, by far the most of the programming was music shows. And the diversity of the programmers with their music was like wall-to-wall, covering almost every imaginable music genre. As far as the talk shows, there were a lot of issues with forest management that came up. County governance came up in the talk shows. It was Southern Humboldt getting a grip on their own future, basically, is what it was. Bringing the audience, actually, what they needed to know about a lot of the issues that were happening. The camp was happening at that time, the campaign for marijuana planting. We had, when the helicopters would fly, we had the community service, community safety and awareness report that basically started out as a way for those people who had animals, like horses, that they could deal with them appropriately and not have the helicopters spook them and have them run and break loose, which did happen a time or two. So just moving in a direction so that the community had way more awareness of what was going on in Southern Humboldt.
And then I was also curious, just as the current news director, I don't know a ton of how the news department got started. I have some archives, recordings that go back to the early 90s. But do you have any info on just the news department, how our local news department got going?
You know, I don't remember who was at the helm of it at that time, but we did almost immediately have a news department. It kind of blew me away on how rapidly things did come together to cover the bases with the programs. And of course, news and public service announcements, all of that was very important to the community. Having local news instead of hearing what comes out of the Eureka area, it was home. It was home. It hit home. People were eager to help, put it that way.
And then just anything else you'd like to share with listeners in celebration of the 39 years of KMUD?
Well, the community support, the financial support from the community, the community was giving, way, way giving. In those days, there was obviously more money flowing, and a lot of that money went into the station. The station was well established early on, thanks to the generosity of the community.
Thank you to our first KMUD program director, Harold Day, and to everyone who has contributed to KMUD in the last 39 years. Volunteering, building our new studio after we moved out of the cabins in Garberville, DJing, our talk show hosts, staff, founders, donors, grantees, sponsors, and time contributed to our community radio here in Southern Humboldt. We wouldn't be people-powered without you. However, we're still struggling with the loss of Corporation for Public Broadcasting funds and need your help to stay afloat. Help us celebrate by making a donation, donating a car, or helping by volunteering. Together, we can keep the mud flowing for another 39 years. Sign up to volunteer or become a new station member by contacting udw@kmud.org or membership@kmud.org. Reporting for KMUD, I'm April Lewis. Last for tonight's newscast, we have a story from Suzanne Potter on a California assembly bill to curb abuse in the staffing industry.
California is another step closer to adopting reforms meant to protect vulnerable workers from big medical bills if they get hurt on the job. A key measure just cleared the state Senate. The SAFE Act would require staffing agencies to register with the state and prove they have workers' compensation coverage. In January, a judge ordered Mann Staffing in Oxnard to pay $650,000 for failing to provide workers' comp. Andrew Reed, a senior deputy district attorney in Ventura County, investigated the case.
There needs to be greater penalties associated with operating without workers' compensation insurance, and not just with workers' compensation insurance that doesn't adequately cover them, but with those that are just operating without it, period.
The bill would also require staffing agencies to disclose their finances. Under the plan, the state would have the power to issue stop work actions against uninsured operators. The American Staffing Association opposes the measure, calling it unnecessary, adding that the new registration fee could be costly. Reed says this type of fraud can be hard to track down and prosecute. The SAFE Act aims to deter bad actors from setting up fly-by-night staffing operations in the first place.
We are keeping track of that, and we're trying to identify it because we don't want to see workers who are harmed and denied the benefits that they're entitled to under California law.
The bill now goes to the State Assembly for consideration. Supporters say it would also level the playing field for staffing agencies that comply with the law. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
That's all for our news broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our rotation of broadcast engineers, Dennis Marr, Katie Phillips, Bianna Federico, Michael McCaskill, Larry Lashley, and Javier Rodriguez. Also thanks to our reporter for this broadcast, Daniel Mintz. KMUD News is online. You can find us on kmud.org and now streaming on podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening. You can also follow us on social media at KMUD News, including Facebook and Instagram. Do you have issues important to you that deserve more attention? Are there stories we're missing or that you're curious about? You can call us at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Redwood Community Radio Incorporated is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located on the unceded territory of the Sinkyone, Wailaki, Wiat, Wilcut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connection that these tribes have to the region. I'm April Lewis. Stay tuned in.